Well, it's nice to get to speak with all of you again this evening. I want to talk tonight about seeing the big picture. I know sometimes for me, when I'm in a struggle, when I'm going through some challenging time in my life, I get very focused in on the challenge and trial that I'm going through. And it becomes very difficult for me to zoom out and see the bigger picture of why I'm struggling with that, what it's all about, where this fits into the bigger picture of who God is and my salvation and where I'm going. And so I think this is a really useful topic for us to talk about, of seeing the bigger picture, whether we're going through hard times or sometimes even when we're going through good times, being able to zoom ourselves out just a little bit and see that larger picture. To look at this topic, turn your Bibles to the book of 1 Samuel. The book of 1 Samuel. We are going to be looking at the story of Hannah this evening. 1 Samuel chapter 1 and 2 is what we're going to be looking at. I believe that Hannah had an amazing ability to see the big picture. And hopefully we can learn from the way that she saw the big picture, and we can learn how to do that as well. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. That's one of the key verses of the book of Judges. And the book of Judges kind of paints a backdrop for these opening chapters of the book of 1 Samuel. The book of Judges is this really dark time in Israel's history, very terrible time, when they didn't have a king, and rather than following God, everybody did what was right in his own eyes. And so you have this kind of chaotic time period where morality is very, very low. There's lots of idolatry. There's lots of violence. The book ends with this crazy civil war that breaks out between the tribes. So you have just this a lot of tumult and crazy stuff going on at that time period. And it was a very immoral time period. There was lots of evil things going on. And then when we get into the book of 1 Samuel, on top of all those things that we learn about, we find a few other challenges they were dealing with. We have the priests in chapter 2 and 3. We learn about Eli is the high priest, and his sons are these two very immoral men, Hophni and Phinehas, and they're committing fornication with the women around the area. They're cheating the people who come to worship God. They're stealing from the people who are offering sacrifices. It's just a horrible situation. And those are the religious leaders of the time. Here, these evil, immoral men are the ones who are supposed to be leading the nation in morality. So, obviously, this is a very, very difficult time. On top of that, you have Israel being very, very much hurt by their enemies. The enemy at this point is the nation of the Philistines. Throughout the book of Judges, you have various nations that come in and attack the nation of Israel, but during this time, we have a lot of problems with the Philistines, and they're causing a lot of problems for the nation of Israel. So here's the nation of Israel, very weak spiritually, very weak in a national kind of way, where they're being beaten by their enemies. It appears to be a very dark time, and a time that was very difficult to be an Israelite. And that's where we meet Hannah. Now, Hannah was a woman who also had her share of challenges. And she says, I'm a woman of sorrowful spirit. The challenge that Hannah had, she was married to a man named Elkanah. And he had two wives. One was Hannah, and one was Peninnah. So right off the bat, that's definitely a challenging situation to be married to this polygamous man. But on top of that, the challenge that she's really concerned about is that she is barren. She cannot have any children. And that is a real trial and a struggle for her. In that time period, having children was such an important thing for a woman, such an important status symbol. It was such an important idea as far as carrying on the husband's name, carrying on the family name. And so it was just critically important for women in a social sense to have a child. On top of that, we have Peninnah, the other wife, who is constantly giving her a hard time and making her life miserable, making fun of her because she doesn't have any children. Peninnah has lots of children, but Hannah doesn't, and so Peninnah's constantly giving her a hard time over this. So poor Hannah is just driven to tears on a regular basis over the fact that she doesn't have any children, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. So that is the dark situation of Hannah, living in a dark time period, living with the challenge of being a barren, and there was nothing she could do about it. It's not something that she could physically fix. And so what she does is she comes to the tabernacle and she prays to God. And she prays in verse 11. She says in 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 11, she made a vow and said, "O Lord of hosts, if you indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and a razor shall never come on his head." So what Hannah says, she prays to God, and she says, "If you will just answer my prayer and give me a son, I will devote him to you and make him what's called a Nazirite for life, a man who is fully devoted to God." It was something that was taught about in the old law, where they could devote someone to God, and that man who's devoted to God would never cut his hair as a sign of his devotion. And his entire life's work would be devoted to God's service in some way. And so that's what she says she's going to do. And God answers her prayer, and he gives her a son. And she's so happy. And after some period of time, after the child is weaned, she brings him to the tabernacle. And she presents him to Eli and says, "Here's the son that I prayed for. He's now devoted to God. He's going to stay here at the tabernacle and he's going to serve here." And then in chapter 2, we have this beautiful prayer that Hannah prays to God, thanking God and praising God for what he's done. And I want to focus this lesson this evening just on this prayer that Hannah prays, because there are some amazing things we can learn from this. The thing that really jumps out to me with this prayer is it's not at all what I would expect. Here's a woman who hasn't had a baby, and now she has a baby. And I would expect that would be what she would talk about in her prayer. But she doesn't directly mention that at all. I would expect some kind of prayer like, "Thank you, God, so much for giving me a baby. I've wanted a baby forever, and now you've answered my prayer, and I'm so happy. Thank you for loving me so much." That's not really what her prayer looks like at all. So I want to start by just reading through this whole prayer. And when we read through it, let's think about Hannah and her situation praying this prayer and try to think about, why is she saying these words? Why is she bringing up these specific things to God? So let's read it. It's kind of lengthy, but I think we're going to be talking about it for the rest of the service, and I think it's something that's going to be very beneficial. Chapter 2, verse 1. "Then Hannah prayed and said, 'My heart exults in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth speaks boldly against my enemies. Because I rejoice in your salvation, there is no one holy like the Lord. Indeed, there is no one besides you, nor is there any rock like our God. Boast no more so very proudly. Do not let arrogance come out of your mouth. For the Lord is a God of knowledge, and with him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty are shattered, but the feeble gird on strength. Those who were full hire themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry cease to hunger. Even the barren gives birth to 7, but she who has many children languishes. The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. The Lord makes poor and rich. He brings low. He also exalts. He raises the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with nobles and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he set the world on them. He keeps the feet of his godly ones, but the wicked ones are silenced in darkness. For not by might shall a man prevail. Those who contend with the Lord will be shattered. Against them he will thunder in the heavens. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth, and he will give strength to his king, and will exalt the horn of his anointed. That is an amazing prayer. But it's very puzzling. Why is she talking about those kinds of things? Here, she's just had a baby, and she's thanking God for a baby, but she's not talking. Baby's never said in the song. Instead, she's talking about things about, like, shattering the bow of the mighty. She's talking about defeating enemies. She's talking about poor people becoming rich and rich people becoming poor. And then she concludes it with talking about God giving strength to his king. And as we just looked at, there was no king in Israel. They didn't have a king. So what is she talking about? Well, here's what we want to talk about this evening. Hannah sees the bigger picture. I believe that's why she can say these words, is because she sees a much bigger picture than maybe what we would have first thought about when we read the first chapter of 1 Samuel. And so let's look at the picture that she sees and figure out how we can learn to see the bigger picture in our lives. The first point is that Hannah sees how God can use what she has. She sees what she has, and then she sees how God can use that to his glory. She has a baby, but she doesn't just look at this as God gave me a baby. She's looking at how can God take this baby and do great things with my child. When we think about the period of the judges, this is a period of time when there's a lot of evil going on, but God was every so often raising up a judge who would follow him and who would lead the people. And there was at different times when God raised up different kinds of judges. But you even had previously judges who were Nazarites. Samson was one who was devoted from his birth as a Nazarite to be fully devoted to God. And so this idea has already been seen previously. And so when she devotes her child to God as a Nazarite, she's probably thinking, here's a leader for God. Here's someone who can do something in God's kingdom. And she sees how evil the priests are there, and how much immorality there is, and she's thinking, I'm going to let my son minister at the tabernacle, and he's going to do what's right, and he's going to lead the people in the direction they need to be going. And so, when she sees this hopeless situation, this terrible, chaotic period, she sees how her son, whether she sees it by faith or whether it's through prophecy, she sees the great work that her son is going to do. And her son, Samuel, is going to usher in a whole new time in Israel's history. He's going to usher in a time of David being king, the golden age of Israel's history. And it was a time when their enemies were defeated, when the Philistines were finally beaten. It was a time when David, who was just a peasant, gets elevated all the way to kingship. It was a time when great warriors like Goliath were defeated. It was a time where you could see God's hand at work. And so those are the kinds of things that she's praying about here. She's seeing what's going to be happening in the future. As God takes her son and he uses her son for his glory, she sees that. And so she can pray about things like the bows of the mighty being shattered. She can pray about her salvation in verse 1 because she can see by faith the salvation that will come to her nation. It's an amazing perspective. So, the question for us is, can we see that bigger picture? Can we look at the things that God has given to us and think about how God can use those for His glory? When I train my children, do I think about how God can someday use my children to His glory? Maybe in ways much, much bigger than He's ever used me. Maybe my children will grow up to do some great thing that God has in His plan. When I think about that, it helps me see the importance of how I raise my children. Or when I give my money to God, thinking about the great things that God can do with the money that I give to Him. When I give my time to God, when I devote my time to His service, thinking about what God can do with that time. When I go and I teach someone about the gospel, thinking about, as God causes that increase, what great things God can do. As I teach someone and they're saved, and they go off to teach someone and they're saved and they teach someone, and all the good that is done around the world when I use my talents to serve God. Do we think in those terms? Do we think in how God can take the little talents that we have and He can use them for His glory in great ways, if that's what He wants to do? We looked at the verse this morning in Tim's sermon about how our battle is not with flesh and blood, but is with the principalities and the powers in the heavenly places. The little things that we do here on earth have massive spiritual significance. And can we see that bigger picture of how we use our gifts affects so much in the spiritual realm? I think when we see that better, it helps us to do so much more when we have that bigger perspective. She sees who God is. This song, this prayer, is all about God. It is all about God and His power, who He is and what He does. And you see a lot of amazing praise to God here. In verse 2, she says, There is no one holy like the Lord. Indeed, there is no one besides you, nor is there any rock like our God. God is greater than anything here on this earth. There is no one like God. That's why it was such a sin to make an idol, to make an image of God, because there's nothing on this earth that even comes close to describing God. God is so much further above anything here. And she praises God to say, there is no one like you. There's no one as holy. There's no one as powerful. There is no one that comes even close to who you are. And she can see, even in this world of that is so messed up and so chaotic, and where the religious people of the time are just complete hypocrites, she can see God is holy. In spite of all the evil in this world, she can see the holiness of God because she has that bigger picture. And she says that God is a rock, nor is there any rock like our God. This is used several times throughout the Old Testament, describing God as a rock, the strength, the steadfastness, the fact that God is not moved. God is dependable. He's there. And we know that His promises are sure. And so, in spite of all the chaotic things that are happening around in her limited vision here on earth, she sees the bigger picture that God is not changed. God's promises will stay true. And then in verse 8, it says, He raises the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with nobles and inherit the seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and He set the world on them. That is such a neat verse. The pillars of the earth are the Lord's. You have God constructing the earth like this piece of architecture. Like He puts up these pillars and He sets the earth down on it. And He says, this is where the earth is going to be, and I'm going to make it strong so it stays right here. God is in complete control. He's the ruler. He has complete authority over the earth because he created it and he sustains it. He's holding it up with these pillars that he's built. She sees who God is and his power, and his power here on earth. In spite of all the evil that's going on, she sees that bigger picture of God's power over the earth. And then she sees her place in reference to God. When she sees who God is, that has all sorts of implications on who she is and who she should, how she should act. In verse 9, it says, "He keeps the feet of his godly ones, but the wicked ones are silenced in darkness, for not by might shall a man prevail." Not by might shall a man prevail. When she sees how powerful God is, she sees her own weakness. And we saw that in her prayer. She knew there was nothing she could do about her situation, but she knew God could. And so she says, not by might can a man prevail. It doesn't matter how strong I am, how smart I am, what abilities I have. God is smarter than me. God is stronger than me. God is the one who's powerful. And God will choose whether I succeed or whether I fail. No matter how strong I think I am, my success or failure is in God's hands. And then she sees her, who God is and how humble she needs to be. She sees in verse 3, "Boast no more so very proudly. Do not let arrogance come out of your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and with him actions are weighed." She says, boast no more so very proudly. When we see who God is, it should humble us. When we see how great God is, we should see how weak we are. And stop boasting. Stop trying to fight against God, but instead submit to God and realize he's the one who's powerful. He's the one who's in control. And so she says, boast no more so very proudly. Don't be arrogant. Don't let arrogance come out of your mouth. Instead, she's saying, the Lord is a God of knowledge. He sees who I am. He sees my actions. He sees what I do. And so that brings us to the fact that if God is the one who supports the world, God has a right to judge the world. And so she talks about in this psalm about how God will judge the world, how he will reward those who follow him, but then he's going to judge those who rebel against him. And that means we need to submit to him, because someday he's going to judge. That leads us to the next point. She sees God's power at work. She goes through a lot of different instances of talking about God taking the rich and making them poor, taking the poor and making them rich, and taking the people who are doing great and bringing them down to the bottom, taking the people who are doing very poorly and bringing them up to the top. And in doing this, she's showing God's judgment and God's reward for the righteous. And she shows how God acts. God has the power to act, but not only does he have the power to act, he does act. And that's what she's trying to show here. She shows how God has the power to save, and God has the power to destroy. Let's look at a few of the verses where she does this. Verse 4, "The bows of the mighty are shattered, but the feeble gird on strength. Those who were full hire themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry cease to hunger. Even the barren gives birth to seven, but she who has many children languishes. The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to Sheol, and he raises up." All these pictures of God takes down and God raises up. God has the power to destroy the wicked, and he has the power to raise up the righteous. Now the question is, how can she be praying this when she sees the world that she lives in? When she sees how chaotic everything is, when she sees the evil priests prospering, when she sees the evil Philistines prospering, how can she be praying about God bringing down the mighty and bringing up the poor? And I believe it's because she has that eye of faith. She knows in God's time, God will judge. And he did. You can see it. He did judge those people. He judged the Philistines. He judged Eli's household. And we need to have the faith that even when we see all the evil around us and it doesn't make sense to us and we see all the chaoticness around us and we see how evil the world is and all the crazy things that are going on around the world and it doesn't seem fair, we need to think, someday God's going to work all of this out. Some of that may be here in this life, but we know it's also going to be in the life to come when God will judge the world. And when we have that bigger picture, it makes the things on this earth make a whole lot more sense. When we can have that bigger picture of what's going to happen in eternity, then all of this strange stuff that's going on here on this earth, all of the wickedness and all of the suffering and all of the wicked people prospering and the good people being persecuted and all of the just crazy things that we see going on around us, they make a lot more sense when we view it in terms of eternity. And it's neat to see how that works out in Israel. When you see how God judges Eli's household, when you see how David kills Goliath, how you see how God takes David and he raises him all the way up to the point of being a king. It's just so neat to see the way the things that she's praying about here are fulfilled in this very same book. It's really a neat picture. Finally, she sees God's great plan. She ends her prayer in verse 10, "Those who contend with the Lord will be shattered. Against them he will thunder in the heavens. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth, and he will give strength to his king and will exalt the horn of his anointed." She ends by talking about God's king. And like we said, there was no king in Israel. But she's talking either by faith or through prophecy that someday her son Samuel is going to anoint David as king. And he would be Israel's great king. But what's so neat is years and years and years later, a descendant of David is going to have a baby. And that woman is also going to pray a prayer to God. And her prayer is incredibly similar to this prayer. Turn over to Luke chapter 1. Luke chapter 1, after Mary learns that she's going to have baby Jesus, she prays a prayer to God. And I'm not going to read the whole prayer, but I just want to read a few verses to show the incredible similarity between these two prayers. In verse 51 of Luke chapter 1, "He has done mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in the thoughts of their heart. He has brought down rulers from their thrones and has exalted those who were humble. He has filled the hungry with good things and sent away the rich empty-handed. He has given help to Israel, his servant, in remembrance of his mercy." Isn't that neat? The way she's talking about the same kinds of things of taking the rich and bringing them down, taking the poor and lifting them up. Why are these prayers so similar? Why is there so much parallel here? I believe that the reason we have these prayers so similar is because they were both talking about the same thing. That through some kind of a prophecy, Hannah was able to see someday there will be a king who will do all these things to such a greater extent. There will be a king who will truly punish the wicked and truly save the righteous. And so when Hannah opens that her prayer by thanking God for her salvation, it's so much more than just salvation from some physical enemies in her time period. It's a salvation that came 1,000 years later from her. It's amazing to see that bigger picture. And I believe Hannah could see that bigger picture. Question is for us, do we see the bigger picture? When we look at our lives, it's so easy to focus on just the small things that we're dealing with right now at this moment. But do we see that picture of Jesus coming to this earth, dying for our sins, of him setting up his church and giving us a job and responsibility here on this earth, and someday promising that he's going to take us home to be with him in heaven? When we start to see that bigger picture, then all of this starts making more sense. And it makes things a lot easier here on earth. And it gives us the faith to do great things for God and to do the things that he's called us to do. I hope that this sermon has been helpful for you. I hope that we can all learn to see that bigger picture. If you're not a Christian, then I hope that seeing this bigger picture has helped you to see where you are and how you need to change your life to be pleasing to God. If you're subject to the invitation, you can come forward and you can be baptized and you can have your sins washed away as we stand and sing. Please come forward.